Welcome to the Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast, where trauma survivors become healthy thrivers. Each month, we'll feature a theme in the trauma recovery and empowerment field to promote your recovery, healing, and learning how to build dreams. Here's your host, Karen Robinson, transformational coach and therapist.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Heal, Thrive, Dream podcast. Today, our awesome guest is Dr. Gina Simmons Schneider. She is the fabulous author of Frazzle Brain, Break Free from Anxiety, Anger, and Stress Using Advanced Discoveries in Neuropsychology. This was released in March of 2022, and we'll have in the show notes how you can get your own copy of that book, and she'll talk about that book today. Dr. Gina is a licensed psychotherapist, executive coach, and a corporate trainer for Fortune 500 companies. She serves as co-director of Schneider Counseling and Corporate Solutions. So welcome, Dr. Schneider. We're so happy that you're here with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited to talk with you today.
Awesome. Anything in your bio that you would like to just add about yourself?
Well, I think because your audience are trauma survivors, I could probably talk a bit to that my upbringing was pretty traumatic, abandoned by my father, and my mother was a single mom and with two young kids, and we were close to homelessness, but we had to kind of live with some food insecurity to pay the rent. And at 15, I had to go to work to try to supplement our family income to pay for necessities. And I think that trauma of poverty and abandonment sort of shapes my whole life, even though we did eventually make it out of that and we're all thriving now. It, you know, when you have that childhood sort of loss and really having to be on your own at a young age, I ended up living as an emancipated minor and worked my way through college and, you know, eventually had my own family. But, you know, it stays with you because there is this awareness at a very young age of the impermanence of all things, that everything is temporary and everything has an expiration date, including ourselves. And sometimes our relationships, the things that we want to feel confident about, are, you know, we lose them for many different reasons, right? People pass away, they drift away, they move away. And so we're left with our own survival skills. And they can, one of the great things about survival skills is they can be taught. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the advantages I had was that I was interested in learning new things. So I think that having a flexible curiosity and reaching out to therapists, I certainly did that, reaching out to friends, reaching out to books, self-help books, mm-hmm. reaching out and sometimes just taking a walk and looking for a new opportunity to do something can change our lives and help us out of something really painful and difficult. Support groups help and that sort of thing. For me, I was in sort of despair. I had lost my job. I was in my early 20s and I took a walk and my best friends had moved away. Again, another loss that's a trauma trigger when you've been abandoned. And I took a walk and I found this green flyer that was plastered to a wall that had all these concert promotion tickets and, you know, all these different things on it, advertisements. And there was a green flyer that said, "Help wanted, no experience necessary, suicide crisis volunteers will train." And I was really attracted to that idea of being able to learn how to help people who are suicidal, and being able to help people and being able to be trained to do that was just incredibly intriguing idea. And of course, it was incredibly insensible when I needed a job, a paying job, to volunteer somewhere. But I took the phone number and it really changed my life, because from that moment, I met this whole circle of interesting healers and great people that were helping others, and ended up changing my career goals and became a psychotherapist. So I think that from those moments where you try something new, that can generate hope. Mm-hmm. And hope is healthy, and that can pull us out, be very healing. It was for me.
Very interesting story. It was really well told. For people who may not know what emancipation is, or maybe curious about what it was like for you, are you comfortable in sharing a little more about that?
Yeah, I mean, it really wasn't a formal emancipation. You can formally go to a judge if you're a minor and you're capable of supporting yourself financially and get a legal document that says you are fully able to live as an adult. I didn't really need to do that. I just was living independently on my own at 16, supporting myself.
Okay.
So I was not, you know, I was making all those decisions. I had dropped out of high school, which is an interesting thing that years ago, my friend who went to that high school went to the high school reunion, and she said that I was the only female listed under their distinguished alumni list from that high school, even though I had dropped out. But I dropped out because it was really difficult to get to high school. You know, we were in poverty. Transportation costs money, right? Mm-hmm. And then the time to go to high school was time I couldn't work. And so I entered, at that time, they had correspondence school where you could go to high school. I paid for myself to go to correspondence school. And you get books in the mail, and then you study the books and you take tests, and then you get grades and you eventually graduate from high school. It's called homeschooling now, and they have online versions of that. And it does really help a lot of young people who do have to work. There are many people who need alternative education. And fortunately, we live in a country where that's possible for a lot of people. But yeah, I was able to work, often had several jobs, house cleaning, sales, that kind of thing. So emancipated means basically I was not under any adult supervision, really, and living independently.
If you think about it, it's really quite the story, you know, that you had dropped out of high school, and then out of all the people that graduated and went on to further education, you also did it, but in a different way, and still came out on top. So it talks about your character and fortitude and a desire to have a better life for yourself. So I like to tell people, you know, because we come from hard beginnings doesn't mean we have to end hard. You know, we can choose different paths.
And it's not an upward, you know, I think a lot of times people hear a story like mine and they think, oh, it was just a, you know, smooth sailing uphill pathway, you know, and it, you know, life slams us down over and over and over again, often. And so it really, really got support. I found friends who were role models. I just sought out people and information to try to help me because I really didn't know how to do what I wanted to do. And I didn't even know it was possible to do what I ended up doing. If you'd have asked me at 15 that I, you know, told me I'd be doing what I'm doing now, I would have thought that was the most absurd thing in the world. It seemed impossible. So, but I think for trauma survivors, we are in those dark places where we don't, where we feel hopeless and helpless. Mm-hmm. And that is sort of part of the journey. If we can survive that and keep seeking, you know, seeking help, support, and letting other people nourish us, then that can be part of what strengthens us. It's like that Nietzsche saying, right, that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean we're not suffering, right? It doesn't mean we don't suffer. We do. But I do think that I did have people I'm grateful for all along the way that said, try this and try that, and here's a book, and here's how you enroll in community college. You know, just friends that showed me some opportunities that I never would have known existed otherwise. So I think we, you know, allowing ourselves to connect with others is a a big part of healing. You know, the way when I was studying the neuropsychology of trauma in my book, I do have a small section on trauma and trauma recovery, because it is relevant to everybody. If we live long enough, we're all going to have traumatic experiences. It's part of being human. And when I was researching the neuropsychology of it, it's interesting how our brain doesn't forget. It never forgets something traumatic. Right. It's like the brain needs to remember that those were the poison berries that almost killed you. Don't ever eat those again, right? So our brain will not forget those things. But what helps our nervous system recover and heal are new experiences that are almost literally overlaid. We get new neural connections that are overlaid on the old ones that help us heal and make our life bigger, so that the trauma doesn't seem to be the biggest thing in our life anymore. And when we're first recovering from a trauma, that's all we can see. Sometimes that seems like the biggest thing in our life. But with new experiences, it adds sort of another layer to our lived experience. And pretty soon it can sort of fade into the background, never to be forgotten. But, you know, we need the learning from it. But it doesn't need to be at the forefront of our working memory and our working brain every day.
That must be why a lot of us enjoy learning so much and reading. And I think traveling is a big new adventure too, that really helps form beautiful new memories as well. You know, exploring different cultures and trying different foods and just seeing beautiful scenery. Is that something that you enjoy as well, travel?
I do. I really do. And I haven't gotten to do a lot since COVID. I haven't traveled abroad since the COVID-19 pandemic, but we do travel in the US. We did go to Hawaii, and that was wonderful. Went to Kauai, which, you know, really does put you in the aloha spirit and lowers the nervous system arousal. The fast-paced city we live in San Diego, and this city, you know, it's a big city, and it can jar the nervous system to be working at a fast pace all the time. And so getting away and being in a different place, exploring a different culture, the Hawaiian culture is so beautiful. And so, yeah, I love travel. We do love that. And a lot of times you can travel with books too. Like, yes, I've been really enjoying reading books by people from different cultures and learning about their lived experience too. And you get a window into a whole other way of seeing the world, which is enriching. And again, it broadens our neurons, our neural perspectives, and it can give us creative ideas for problem solving in our own life.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you said that, because not everyone listening can afford travel. And so books, going local, you know, even, you know, going to your park, nearby park or wherever's close, water, like if there's a lake nearby or a beach, our imaginations are incredible. And it's okay to just picture different scenarios. And, you know, one day, you know, if you put all your energy towards that direction, you'll get there. Do you have a favorite book that has an adventure in there that you'd like to share?
I have read some really great books lately. I really loved Christine Ng. Her last name is spelled N-G, but it's pronounced Ng, like I-N-G. Mm-hmm. Her book, Our Missing Hearts, is such a beautiful novel. It's a novel. And it deals with discrimination against Asian Americans, and it's sort of set in a near future time where the government starts changing little by little, creeping in and putting restrictions on whose voice is okay to be heard. And it's a beautiful story. There's a 12-year-old boy named Bird who's searching for his mother, his missing mother, and he's biracial. The other book I read that was really illuminating was Beautiful Country by Shan Julie Wang, W-A-N-G is her last name. Beautiful Country made a lot of the best of books of 2021.
Yeah.
And her memoir, her true story of being a illegal Chinese immigrant as a child in the US, and you know, the discrimination and the poverty and all the struggles she went through. And you know, they had to leave the United States and they were always living in fear. And they eventually got legal papers to come back, and she's now living in Brooklyn, New York as an attorney. But I had the privilege of getting to meet her at the San Diego Writers Festival recently, and what an outstanding individual and a true story of trauma survival. But it also gave me a window into the immigrant story, and particularly Asian immigrants and some of the struggles they've been through, which again is about that eye-opening education that helps you see things from a different perspective and appreciate what other people have lived through.
Yes, absolutely. Christine Ng, was that Missing Hearts her second book? Do you know?
It's her third book.
Okay.
They made a mini series out of one of her books. She's got three books out, and one of her books they made was on Reese Witherspoon's Best Of, and I think she was one of the producers that made a mini series out of it. It was called Little Fires Everywhere.
Yeah.
Really, that was a really, really
that.
Lovely. Yeah, yeah, she's a wonderful writer and just a really interesting. Her stories are very interesting, thought-provoking, and they can deal a lot with what families struggle with when outside forces like poverty or government control or some of these outside forces.
Yeah, I actually got
cause
to meet
trauma.
Her. I met
You
her
did.
At a book festival. I just wanted to make
Awesome.
Sure I had, it was in Northern Virginia. I just wanted to make sure I had it correct first. I was like, okay, because I didn't recognize the book that you mentioned, but because she's written it later. Yeah, so I had to read this one. That sounds really great. And Beautiful Country, I have read. It's a fabulous book. Yeah,
it's really well
I love done. I love books, and I love when my guests love books. It's rare that a guest I have doesn't love books, and I want to say, what happened to you that you don't love books? But I don't.
Well, what's wonderful too is if someone does struggle with dyslexia or attention deficit or some of these other learning disabilities that make reading really difficult, that we've got these audio books that are wonderful, you know. And I know a lot of people with ADHD that read a lot of books by, you know, they'll be out hiking and they'll have an audio book, they'll be out doing something, and they're able to absorb a lot of books that way because they're able to, you know, use the energy of the hyperactivity while still kind of, you know, listening at the same time. I like to be curled up the old fashioned way with a book, you know, just on a comfy couch.
I like both ways, and I usually have a physical book going and an audiobook going at the same time because of driving or like doing chores, folding laundry, you know, emptying the dishwasher. I have my audio going. It's really helped
and
me
podcasts.
Get a lot of books in. Oh,
podcasts,
yeah.
Of course. You got to support the podcast world, right? That's part of your world too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us a little more about Frazzle Brain. Like, what was your motivation to write it? And what about it would you like to share that doesn't give it all away?
Oh, we can't give it all away because there's quite a lot in it. But I wanted to write a book that was accessible and calming to read if you're struggling with anxiety, anger, and stress, which really the word for our time is frazzled. As a therapist, I'm sure you hear people all the time using that word. I'm just so frazzled. And being frazzled is really this mixture of fatigue, stress, pressure, irritability, and a little bit of like, just and maybe a little bit of helplessness too. Like, how do I get out of this? I have to do all these things, right?
Right.
So and in working a lot and treating a lot of people with anxiety and depression, I found that I would refer books to them, and a lot of people couldn't get through the book because it was so stressful to read, because they found themselves reading about the symptoms of anxiety and the diagnoses of anxiety before they even got into any remedies. You know, they're seeking help and remedies and solutions to calming the nervous system and feeling better. And they don't need a whole psychology class in, you know, what is my diagnosis? So with that in mind, I wanted to create a book that was really science-based. So it's all evidence-based. It's not just stuff I made up because I think I know everything. It's stuff from many, many years of research in neuropsychology. And it's also super exciting now what we know about the brain and the power of our thoughts, our intentional, you know, focused thoughts. When we focus our thoughts in a certain direction, it has physiological effects on our body and on our nervous system. And then when we do certain intentional behaviors, and I talk about these behaviors in the book, behaviors such as acts of kindness. If we just choose to do some acts of kindness, it lowers our inflammation in our bloodstream, improves our immune system functioning, and boosts our mood. And then intentional exposing ourselves to experiences, to healing experiences, new experiences, like I accidentally discovered in my healing, that new healing experiences, such as the feeling of awe and wonder that you might have observing a magnificent waterfall or a great sporting event. I know the world probably got a lot of healing from soccer, you know, is still enjoying, you know, the global fascination with soccer and seeing some magnificent athletes do their thing. Mm-hmm. It can fill us with awe if you allow it. I think a lot of people have become so cynical and hardened. And so I talk a lot about softening our cynicism, because it does shut us off from healing. So healing experiences, we know, like the experience of awe and wonder. I talk about my husband and I going to see Sir Paul McCartney perform at Dodger Stadium with the full moon setting behind him. And we all sang together, the whole stadium, 50,000 plus people. We're all singing together. And this couple we didn't know was seated next to us. And at the end, we were all kind of crying tears of joy and really in awe of how incredibly he could play and perform at his age too, as he was over 70. And we were so full of awe that and wonder that we enjoy that we hugged each other, these strangers, and we hugged each other. And that's one of the things that awe and wonder can do for us, is it creates a sense of connection. It humbles us. And humility is one of those emotions that allows you to be open to new learning.
Right.
Is that the two words that interfere the most with new learning are, I know. You know, as soon as you say, I know, you're blocking any new learning, because we don't know everything. None of us know enough. None of us know enough. Mm-hmm. So that's why we need different experiences. We need to open ourselves to healing experiences intentionally. So I talk about specific things and what the science says about it. It's not just me saying, hey, have a nice experience. It's no, actually, this has anti-inflammatory effects. This has healing effects. The 3-day breast cancer walk by the Susan G. Komen Foundation, they have these fundraising events, and they do 3-day walks where you walk 20 miles a day for 3 days, you raise all this money. And at the end of this 3-day walk, we were tired, and we got to the stadium where it ended, and we were greeted by this gauntlet of volunteers, all these people, thousands of people together, because we care about someone with cancer.
Yeah.
It just chokes me up even talking about it, you know? When you are in a community of people doing something like Habitat for Humanity, or a lot of church communities will do, you know, fundraising events, or they will help the aged. And when you're doing something like that, when you're connecting with people who care about other people, it actually lowers your risk of getting colds, flus, and other viruses. It improves your immune system. It lowers inflammation. And it actually improves our visual ability to see what's in our visual field as well. So what they did this interesting study where they made people feel a whole bunch of negative things by watching negative movies, you know, depressing, sad things in these movies. And then they measured where their eyes went on this visual scanner.
Mm-hmm.
And when we are feeling negative feelings, our eyes only look at a limited view of our visual space.
It's you teaching me things.
Isn't awesome. It cool? I was really excited by this study. I thought, some of the best studies are really simple designs and they tell you so much. And then they found the opposite thing is that when our happy emotions or when we're feeling, we're watching movies that are uplifting, that our eyes literally view a wider range of things around us. So even if you're feeling really sad and depressed, it can really help you to do something like what I did, is to take a walk and intentionally look around at a lot more, you know? Like when I'm in a bad mood and I take a walk, my first thing is I'm just looking down at the ground. Where am I stepping? You know, how am I, you know, and I'm just pounding out the steps. and then when I do this intentional thought and practice what I preach to other people, I start going, well, just savor. What was that? Oh, there was a bird and a tree. And then, oh, there's, oh, wow, look at the hibiscus plants. And there's pretty flowers over there. All these cute kids are playing. Pretty soon I'm seeing more. I'm experiencing more. My world is broadening. So positive emotions are really necessary for us to actually see what exists. And I have an exercise in my book called Amplify the Good, where you begin to recognize something that is already really good and working in your life, like a person that you really love or care about. And you visualize that person in detail in the exercise. And then when you get through with the exercise, you kind of open your eyes and look around your environment to anything that any beauty around you, anything that you find interesting or intriguing, like a book. Maybe there's books. I discover books this way on my bookshelf that I forgot I'd bought. You know, there's a book there. And I'm like, oh, I can read that. You know, so we a lot of times overlook all of the positive things in our lives when we're so hyper-focused on problems. And so that's one of the things I recommend in the book is, yes, the problems are there. That's okay. But you can amplify the good, and it changes your brain chemistry, and it changes your physiology, which in very healthy ways.
That was so inspiring. That almost made me cry.
Aww.
What a beautiful practice that is. I love that. It reminds me of the concept of just finding joy, just keep looking for it. It's all around us. We just have to open our mind to it, to welcoming it in. Yeah, that's beautiful. All right. Thank you. We are running out of time. So I want to just check in to see, you know, what do you offer your clients? Like, do you teach courses? Do you do trainings, workshops? Tell us more about what you offer.
Well, I am in the process of developing a frazzle brain training. I haven't done that yet, but we do anger management and conflict management trainings for individuals, couples, families, and executive coaching for people who are struggling with different relationship dynamics in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things we do in our practice, in addition to a regular private practice. And then I do have a website, frazzlebrain.com, where you can get updates. If you want to get on my mailing list, you can get updates on any things that we're doing. I also blog for Psychology Today, a Frazzle Brain blog on Psychology Today.
Awesome.
And you can get a lot of free articles that flesh out some of the ideas we've talked about here. A lot of helpful things I share in my Psychology Today blog. So you can also connect with me on social media through frazzlebrain.com if you want to, you know, any referrals to information and things like that. And I am available for speaking engagements if people want a speaker for their organization virtually or in person or whatever. And I speak on a number of different topics, managing anxiety, anger, stress, depression, and conflicts.
Yeah, you have a voice that people could listen to for a long time. So I think that's a good calling for you. I just think that survivors of difficult things, and then we make our way, and no one says that's easy, but it's so meaningful when it happens. And it's meaningful not just as for us as individuals, but because of the impact we can have on others. So I love that you're speaking and writing. There's no one more qualified, right?
Thank you. Well, I think that, you know, the work you do is amazing. And the more we can let people know that trauma is pretty universal and that you're not alone. I think sometimes when we suffer trauma, we feel so much shame and we start to isolate ourselves and close ourselves off. And I really want people to know that there are so many ways of connecting. And if you can't connect with people, connect with an animal. Animals are really wonderful, dogs and cats and all that, because those connections are healing, and sometimes those new experiences open your world a bit more and can lead to some really beautiful things in your life and great joy.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Dr. Gina, for being here with us today.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening in today. Please join us next week, same day and time. Also, I would love for you to check out my website, healthrivedream.com.